94.5 The Zone, an in-depth look at Titans football with the coach. Titans Radio's Dave McGinnis.
That is such a great call.
This is Mac Talk.
Presented by Gary Ashton of RE/MAX Advantage.
Now, here's Coach Mac and Titans Radio's Rhett Bryan.
What a great time to be a Titans fan. We welcome you to another edition of Mac Talk on the home for Titans football, 104.5 The Zone, presented by Gary Ashton of RE/MAX Advantage. He and his team are the official realtors of the Tennessee Titans. On tonight's show, we look at the overtime thriller over Houston one last time at Nissan Stadium from last Sunday. And certainly we preview the Pittsburgh Steelers who come to town this Sunday. And if we have time, we'll peek at the AFC South games in Week 7. And of course, we will take your questions for Coach Dave McGinnis. I know you want to talk about 5-0 Titans at 615-737-1045, 615-737-1045. He's ready to talk to you. The Titans are undefeated. They face the undefeated Pittsburgh Steelers this Sunday at Nissan Stadium. All the coverage on the home for Titans football right here on 104.5 The Zone. Sunday begins at 10 a.m. We're on the air at 11 with Network Countdown, Titan Countdown, and kickoff is set for 12:02 with the voice of the Titans, Mike Keith, and of course, the head coach of Titans Radio, Dave McGinnis. Coach Mac, the Titans get it done 42-36 in overtime Sunday against the Houston Texans. They led it 21-7 with 3:30 left in the first half, but the third quarter was a nightmare that started with a sack of Ryan Tannehill. Two plays later, a blocked Steven Guskowski field goal that led to a Texans touchdown. Then three plays into the Titans' next possession, a sack and forced fumble by J.J. Watt leads to a second Texans touchdown in a four-minute span of game clock. And the fourth quarter was just unbelievable. All of a sudden, it's 23-21 Texans. The Titans trail in this one. And I'm going to let you pick it up there and talk about what happened in the fourth quarter and then what we saw to get to overtime and what happened in overtime.
Yeah, Red. Well, first of all, I mean, you know, for all of our fans, all of our listeners tonight, which I know are great Titans fans, you and I in that booth, we were there live and in person, you know, along with what we have, 10,000 fans that were in the stadium.
That's
It was extremely loud. They were very, very much into it. And early on, I mean, we were talking in the broadcast booth, you know, about the free flow of the game early on. Everybody was feeling, you know, pretty good. And then all of a sudden, as you said, it was like a tsunami hit. And then you are fighting for your life to keep your head above water. The thing that was so impressive to me about this whole thing was the fact that this Tennessee Titan team, Rhett, they did again in this ball game what they have done throughout the entirety of this season. They maintained their composure. They maintained their composure. They maintained their mental and physical toughness throughout, and they didn't panic. And I think that's a huge thing, you know, that you and I can talk about here because we've experienced it with this team all year at every ball game in person. And plus for our listeners and the Titans fans that have watched them and have followed them and have lived with this football team the way they are, there is no panic in this team. They are very, very confident in what they can do. But this one got a little bit tight, and we were all feeling it. We were all feeling it in the booth. But then as the play started to unfold and the play started to be made, everybody was like, holy, here we go again. Here we go again. And it started rolling. But I tell you what, when you get a ball on the 6-yard line and you hand the ball off, you're really kind of expecting just to kind of move it out and get breathing room. And then the right side of that offensive line, Nate Davis did a tremendous job of blocking on that right side of the offensive line. They got up and cut Zach Cunningham off. He took a false step to his right to the offensive left. And then all of a sudden, Derrick Henry gets out in the open, lowers his target on Reed as far as for the stiff arm. Reed came in low. The safety came in low to try to cut him because he saw what happened to Josh Norman last week when he got launched into the middle of next week, you know, taken off of his feet. And then for him to readjust his gun sights on that stiff arm, get it down low. And there were four Texans around him when he broke loose at about midfield. I mean, they had four people right there within three steps of it. By the 40-yard line, he was increasing distance as he went. It looked like he was running on jet fuel and they were running on diesel. I mean, it was so fast how he got, I mean, and when he gets stretched out and all of a sudden, I mean, the electricity in that stadium went absolutely nuts. That look, it's impressive when you have a back that is a danger like that to be able to hit an explosive like that. And when the ball get, and then for them to come back, for the Houston to come back down and to go for two, to really put it at a 3-point game and to make it, that was about, it was going to be over. If they make that play, it's over. And for full disclosure, we're always honest on Mac Talk. The receiver was wide open in the middle of the field, sitting there for that 2-point play. And Big Jeff, Jeffrey Simmons, again, makes another play. He and Daquan had really done a nice job. We had talked about last week how important it was to push the cylinder against Deshaun Watson. They had done a really nice job all day of pushing the cylinder. And really most of the pressure came from them because we weren't getting much outside pressure. We were getting inside pressure from the two big guys. And for him to stick that big paw up there and match the throwing hand and slap that down, and then we go down and tie the ball game. And then win the coin toss, and then here we go again. And you know, the Titans have been trying to throw screen passes all day, you know, and really the Texans had done a great job of sniffing it out. This one was not a screen pass; it was a swing pass that they dropped coverage on because it had taken so long. But Derrick Henry is in such sync with his quarterback; he ran the route downfield, got it 53 yards later, and then when they pull out, as Mike Keith beautifully named it, and it'll be always this name for this formation, the King Cat, brought Firkser in motion across, got a great block on the edge, and then Derrick Henry did a really good job of taking a couple of stutter steps to his right to set up the middle linebacker and then came back to his left and just blew over the goal line. What a finish. What a great game. And those listeners that listen to me up there when Mike Keith is calling the game, I mean, when I start laughing when he's running fast and outrunning everybody, I can't help it. It's just too funny. And then when he scored that winning touchdown, I mean, I about jumped out of the booth. That was a really, really good ball game. It's an important ball game too, Rhett. AFC South game, another game, the second COVID game, basically. Three practices in 16 days. And now we're sitting here getting ready to play the Steelers. But what a great experience that game was.
That voice you hear is Coach Dave McGinnis, the game day analyst for Titans Radio and, of course, a big contributor here on 104.5 The Zone. This is Mac Talk presented by Gary Ashton of RE/MAX Advantage. I'm Rhett Bryan. We thank you all for listening. You can call and ask Coach Mac a question if you'd like at 615-737-1045. And to finish up the analysis on this game, 601 yards, total yards of offense. That's a new franchise record for the Titans. Broke an old record from 1990 from the Warren Moon run and shoot, Webster Slaughter, Ernest Givens days of the Oilers, which is a feat in and of itself. It's the first game in NFL history with a 350-plus yard passer and a 200-plus yard rusher. It's the first game in franchise history for a 300-yard-plus passer, 200-yard rusher, and 100-yard receiver. And Coach Mack, I thought the window in 03 and 04 when Mike Heimerdinger came here and became the offensive coordinator was high-powered offense and fun. It resulted in Steve McNair's best year as a pro and a co-MVP with Peyton Manning in 2003. I thought that was big time compared to what we'd seen with 3 yards in a cloud of dust with Eddie George. But this we're seeing with Arthur Smith and Tannehill and Henry and this whole bunch, it's unreal.
Well, Rhett, and like you say, I mean, and you and I get to be there in person, you know, and work the game and actually see it unfold. But that was history. I mean, as you said, and as you very well documented, and for all of our listeners that listen to us on the radio, that watch it on television, that experienced it as Titans fans, you saw history, you saw franchise history, and for them to put up those types of yardage, and look, we needed every yard, Rhett. We needed every yard because with all, just think about this, and this is what the National Football League is. I mean, you know, we've talked about it before, how many games I've been in, nearly, you know, over 650 NFL games. They're all different. But this ball game, with the record-setting offensive performance, we were basically within 4 seconds of losing that game. And when you think about that, you just think about that, about how close it was and how tight it was. And then, you know, one of the biggest plays in the game is winning the coin toss in overtime.
And Deshaun Watson knew it immediately. He called tails. And the ref said, the call is heads. And he's like, oh, man. And he just walks out of the middle of the field and takes off because he knows it's like, gosh, we cannot stop these guys. And you mentioned the swing pass that Derrick Henry took 53 yards. The next thing you know, well, that was in overtime. But I'm just thinking about all those plays towards the end of that thing. And to get to overtime, you know, A.J. Brown coming to his quarterback and say, hey, throw me the ball. Throw me the ball. I'll go get it.
No, and he went and got it and got 2 feet down. I mean, just perfectly in the end zone. And then I think, Rhett, we would be remiss if we didn't mention Anthony Firkser, you know, and the type of
career day for him. Yes.
You go ahead and give Anthony Firkser some of his numbers. And then Jeremy McNichols. What, think about what he did.
Yeah, he had five. Jeremy McNichols, first of all, had a great week because he was really clutch against the Buffalo Bills 5 days later. I think he's got five rushes for 52 yards or whatever against the Texans. But Anthony Firkser, 8 for 113, I believe, and a score. All that stuff is, you know, career highs for him. And you know, in a place where you needed him because Jonnu Smith had left the ball game with an ankle. We're anxiously awaiting to see what the injury reports look like this week as to whether we have Jonnu Smith's services. But Anthony Firkser has been in this whole deal since he was invited to a rookie mini camp a couple of years ago, and he had some time and some service bouncing around a couple of clubs, and it's amazing what he's done. We know he's a smart guy because he went to Harvard, for heaven's sake, but the guy has been making plays in this. And I think the other thing you have to talk about in this ball game that is so huge is the masterful coaching job of one Mike Vrabel to get 12 men on the field, to get a penalty, to kill and eat up 40 seconds of clock. Joshua Kalu looking at him like he had three heads on his shoulders and saying, you could see him talking through his mask. It's okay. It's okay.
Yeah,
he kills 40 seconds of that clock so that the Houston Texans don't have time.
Yeah, well, what he did, and again, I've been on a lot of national shows, and they asked me about it, if it was intentional. And I said, no, he just kind of lost count of how many players we had on the field. You know, it happens sometimes in the heat of the game. I've been a head coach, and that happens. But really, I mean, that's just that is absolutely, you know, I all the years that I coached from my third year on, you know, I was responsible for the rules, the rule changes, and to know those things and to be able to relay them to the decision makers. Then when I became a decision maker, you know, I had people that would do that for me. And then, you know, working for Jeff Fisher, he was right on top of that, you know, 15 years on the competition committee. Mike Vrabel is tremendous with it. And he's got a couple of people on his staff that are just spot on with that stuff. And look, all of that comes into preparation. And when you're that prepared as a coach and you're players know how prepared you are. I mean, he basically saved himself. And really, Rhett, if you want to know the truth, he should have been able to save 10 more seconds because the rule says when there are 12 men on the field, you've got to stop that clock. No, you've got to stop the clock when the quarterback approaches the center, you know, and they didn't. They let 10 more seconds run. And so, you know, basically he used it. You know, he used it and scored with 4 seconds. So just think about what he did, what he was able to do. And as I said, I'm not saying it was intentional, but I am saying it happened. And so what you're able to do with those types of things. And the other thing that I think we need to talk about is how everybody that is on this roster, and I'm talking about the 53 active and the 16 on the practice squad, they're all coached exactly the same. Because I mean, we had a practice squad player that just been activated that caught the 2-point play, right? I mean,
correct.
In the back of the end zone. I mean, just think about that.
And you think about this. We saw all those training camp practices. Westbrook Akina, when he came in, he had a lot of trouble making catches in practice. And the fact that they put him in there and he made the 2-point conversion with the reception, it's huge.
Yeah, but what it points out is he had some trouble early on in camp, but they kept working with him.
Right.
They kept working with him, and Ryan Tannehill, you know, had faith in him. And Firkser, you know, had said today that everybody, once that ball is snapped and it's a passing play, everybody that's eligible is live. It's not like he's just going to pick one person out and throw to it. Everybody is live. It's very well designed by Arthur Smith. It's very well communicated and understood by everybody during the week in the offensive meetings. And I mean, I just loved watching it. And plus, you know, we got to watch a historic offensive performance and won a just, you know, that was an exciting game. And look, there were 10,000 and change people there that were very involved in it. And I said this after the broadcast on air that's going to be one of those games that 3 or 4 years from now, there will be 100,000 people say they were there.
And we know that won't be true, much like the Music City Miracle 20 years ago.
Exactly.
All right. When we continue on Mac Talk, we'll gloss over a couple of news and notes from the Two-Tone Blue that happened earlier today and has happened in the last couple of days. And certainly we will take your questions for Coach Dave McGinnis at 615-737-1045. Joey in Cross Plains, Ross in Brentwood, hang on. You guys will be first out of the chute when we come back and preview Titans and Steelers this Sunday. It's all ahead on Mac Talk on 104.5 The Zone. You're listening to Mac Talk, presented by Gary Ashton of RE/MAX Advantage on 104.5 The Zone. Move into the real estate fast lane with the Gary Ashton team with RE/MAX Advantage. Gary's guaranteed offer program that lets you bypass the crowded marketplace and sell with speed and confidence. Go to GaryAshton.com to see if you qualify. You'll want to do that because Gary Ashton and his team at RE/MAX Advantage, they're the official realtors of the Tennessee Titans. Got a question for Coach Mack? Call us 615-737-1045 and we will get to you. A couple of news and notes before we do that. Dane Cruikshank activated from injured reserve and began his three-week process at the end of last week. That's something that kind of got lost in those wins over the Bills and over the Texans. Today, Adoree Jackson, same thing. He's off injured reserve. He begins his three-week window to return. And reports from St. Thomas Sports Park, he did practice today. Now, before you get your hopes up into whether he'll play Sunday against the Steelers, which, hey, I don't blame you, well, let's just kind of, as Coach Mack would say, keep our powder dry and see what happens with all of this. All right. We know that this Sunday, the marquee matchup in Week 7 in the NFL happens at Nissan Stadium at noon with a noon kickoff. The Titans at 5-0 host the undefeated Pittsburgh Steelers. Coverage begins right here on The Zone at 10 o'clock. Let's get to the questions because I know they're out there. Joey in Cross Plains, you're up first, sir. Here is Coach Dave McGinnis on Mac Talk. Go ahead, Joey.
Coach Mack, so I got two for you again tonight. With Corey Davis coming back off the COVID list, how much more, I guess you would put it, more deadly does that make Ryan Tannehill, knowing he has a full complement of wide receivers? And with that defense, you know, Vic Beasley isn't, you know, kind of doing what we paid him to do. So, and I mean, I just know he's only been out, he's only been playing for the last 3 weeks, and he's only showed up on the stat sheet with the one sack. But how does Mike Vrabel kind of, you know, get on him to, you know, light a fire underneath his tail to have like a season he did his rookie year?
Joey, first of all, it's always great to hear from you. I know you really enjoyed listening to that ball game on Sunday. I know that you were all with all the rest of us, you know, sitting there just, you know, hanging on every play. So it's always great to hear from you, Joey. First of all, Corey Davis, that's a big addition. And it's a big addition for this reason. Against this defense especially, Joey, the Steelers are the best defense that we have played. They are very strong up front. We are still going to have to germinate this offense off of our outside zone running game. But off of that comes the play action. Corey Davis being the Z receiver, which means he's going to be the guy that's going to be able to be off the ball and in motion. And hopefully if they're putting eight people up there to stop the run, then we can start getting our Z receiver into some of those transcontinental or TRCs or those deep digs across, you know, across the formation. That's extremely important. Now what we can do using him as a Z and then using, you know, out there on the outside, A.J. Brown as the X and putting Humphreys in the slot and then being able to have Khalif Raymond to take it off the top if you want to put 10 personnel in the game. All of that stuff just gives Ryan Tannehill some more targets to throw to. Earlier in this program, we talked about how no matter who is out there, all these targets are live and viable on every passing play because that's just the way Ryan Tannehill and Arthur Smith run this offense. But getting Corey Davis back, is a big thing for this, and I'm very happy that he's coming back in this ball game. Look, Vic Beasley, you know, he's not made an impact yet, but Mike Vrabel, Vic Beasley knows what he has to do, and he only played 11 snaps last week, and the only way his snaps are going to increase is if he starts to be more productive. You know, Mike Vrabel, you know, he doesn't have to do anything or say anything to Vic Beasley. Vic Beasley is a professional football player that is a veteran football player. He knows what he's signed a contract here to do. I think he's worked himself back into condition. Now we need to start getting some production. As we talked earlier on, most of the pressure last week, you know, came from the inside of the defense. We need to start being able to get some pressure from the outside, rotating those outside backers in, and Vic Beasley needs to be a part of that outside pressure production moving forward.
All right. Since you've been given that answer, and an excellent answer it was, I'm going to answer his question about Corey Davis just in a more condensed version than what you gave. And it's just this simple, Joey. It gives him another weapon to spread the ball around to, which Ryan Tannehill has done a fantastic job with. Week one against Denver, 10 different receivers he hit. Week two against Jacksonville, 6 different receivers. Week three at Minnesota, 9 different receivers. Obviously, they had to take the bye week in week four, but this last week against Buffalo on Tuesday night, 8 different receivers, and against the Houston Texans, 10 different receivers. There's your answer. It just gives him another option and another weapon in this thing. And I think that's a great part of this Arthur Smith offense and also the quarterback in Tannehill is he doesn't necessarily have a favorite or a go-to 2 or 3 guys. As we dice up, you know, some of the Pittsburgh offense, we'll get to a couple of 3 guys that Roethlisberger likes to hit in this thing so far in this season. But he just keeps spreading the ball around in this, and that's your answer there. Ross and Brentwood, you're up next on Mac Talk here on 104.5 The Zone. Go ahead. You're talking to Coach Dave McGinnis.
Hey, guys. Coach Mac, really enjoy your insights and all your stories from your coaching days. Talking about that offense, I mean, it's great to see that it's probably now a strong enough offense in everyone's eyes that I know they're scheming all the time, but I'm sure defensive coordinators are really pulled out all the plugs. Is it overly simplistic to say that we might see, and the Steelers might be that team, if they're already putting 8 in a box, that we'd start seeing more run blitzes that can turn into pass blitzes? I know Arthur is not showing his cards the same way every time, but we do seem to be pretty consistent with either a handoff to Derrick Henry or a play-action pass or a bootleg pass, so that it seems like a blitz could at least give someone a chance to put us in a tougher down and distance. So if you were a defensive coordinator, why would you choose not to do that against the Titans?
Ross, first of all, thank you for your kind comments at the beginning of your comments. You believe me, you know, when I agreed to come back and do this 4 seasons ago, I mean, I absolutely love doing this, and it's for people exactly like you. That's why Rhett and I so much were happy to do Mac Talk starting last year. We will continue to do this to be able to interact and just take a deeper dive on what's going on in the National Football League, and especially with the Tennessee Titans, with great fans like you. Look, they've been getting run blitzes already before. When you're playing a team that you know as a defensive coordinator, and I was a defensive coordinator for a long time in this league, and when I'm playing a team that I know everything generates off their run, I'm going to do everything I can. A lot of things change formationally, but there are always going to be 8 gaps across that line of scrimmage, and the only way an offense can create a 9th gap is by inserting a receiver or a tight end on the move into one of those gaps to make it a double gap. Now, that being said, when you start out against a team like this, the first thing you've got to do is decide as a defensive coordinator, can I match up with their receivers man-to-man? If I can do that, then I am going to bring 6 or more. I'm going to bring 6 or more, and I'm going to bring my people from behind the line of scrimmage into what we call an add. In other words, if I'm a linebacker and I have the running back man-to-man in a man defense, I'm going to add to him to keep him from being able to chip and to keep him from being able to double on any pressure coming up inside. If I can't match up man-to-man, then what I'm going to try to do is bogey and disguise looks and bring either 4 from one side or 4 from the other, either from the closed or the open side, and then play zone pressure coverage behind it, run a what we call a trap coverage behind it, roll to a certain receiver, or at times I'm going to bring five-man pressure and have a low hole rat or a high rat, in other words, a player playing in the middle of the formation, either low or high, to be able to rob certain routes off of certain splits and formations. The next thing I'm going to do is run fake pressures, where I will look and show five or six up, and then I will drop out people that they may point out that they think are coming, and then bring somebody to add a fourth rusher to it. So there's a lot of things available to defensive coordinators. I've done all of them. But first of all, you've got to decide how you match up with the receivers that they have. And the other thing that you've got to do with run pressures is everybody has to be gap sound, because you can still bring as many as you want on run pressures. But and the thing about run pressures are, If you miss one tackle, there's not much back behind it to keep somebody like Henry from taking that thing a long way. So, it's a rob Peter to pay Paul type of decisions that defensive coordinators have to make against this Titans run game. Now, talking about the Steelers are one defense that are good enough physically to be able to play six or seven in the box and still be very solid against the run, because they are very big and they are very athletic.
And let's talk about the Pittsburgh Steelers as we get into this. And you can do just like Ross did and like Joey did and call Coach Dave McGinnis and ask him a question here on Mac Talk, 615-737-1045. Pittsburgh manhandled Cleveland Sunday 38-7. Baker Mayfield benched for the Brownies. They sacked him four times. And as you've already alluded to, this is the best team the Titans have faced this season. They're going to need everything they can get on all three phases and as mistake-free as possible. It's the number two offense in the NFL versus the number two defense in the NFL and the Pittsburgh Steelers. When they were supposed to play in week four, they were number one in quarterback sacks with 15. Well, they still are, and there's just 24 of them now. And it's from all over the defensive lineup, whether it is T.J. Watt or it's Bud Dupree or it's even a cornerback like Mike Hilton. They are in the top 10 against the pass, top five in points allowed, and – we haven't even talked about Roethlisberger and the Steelers' offense in all of this thing. We've talked about how much the addition of having Corey Davis back could help the Titans in this. I'm equally as excited that a Michael Pruitt is actually off the COVID reserve list and can be back in this, because you'll be doing this without your left tackle, Taylor Lewan, who suffered a knee injury Sunday and tore his ACL. And so you may need some help with a guy like him on the other end, or Jeff Swain to chip on that side to help Tyler Sambrello.
Yeah, Rip. Well, protection is going to be paramount in this game, because, as I said, this is one team that can bring four people and put a lot of pressure. You went through the numbers. Now, Keith Butler, who's their longtime defensive coordinator, he is very, very creative and innovative with the way that he brings pressures, but he's got four people across the front that are not only extremely stout in a seven-man front against the run, they can bring pressure against the pass. And what you've got to try to do offensively, Rhett, is stay ahead of the chains so that they can't, dig their cleats in the ground and get in a sprinter stance and make it second and pass or third and pass where they're not even going to honor the run. You have to make them honor the run. You have to stay ahead of the chains. This is the best defense that we have played to this point. And I'll repeat that again. The absolute best. You gave the numbers. Well, those numbers that they have been very well earned. This is a top-tier defense in the National Football League, without a doubt. It's going to be a huge, huge all-day task.
And we're going to get to the phone calls that are starting to stack up here on us. But I want to hit Roethlisberger and this Steelers offense for a moment. 11 touchdowns, one pick, got a 109 passer rating. He's not chunking it just everywhere way down the field, but when he does, it's to Chase Claypool, the rookie fourth-round receiver from Notre Dame, who we vetted in the draft process. They still have Juju Smith-Schuster. They still have James Washington. James Conner, the running back, is still doing what he's done, only he's doing it healthy nowadays. I think there's five different receivers that have 25 targets or more, so he is spreading this thing around efficiently. And let's not forget Eric Ebron, I think, is one of the matchups that has my attention just because of the success he's had against the Titans in previous matchups wearing a different uniform. He's something to guard against. And then they have a guy on special teams, Ray McLeod, He's the number three kick returner in the league right now at 28 yards a return. That's something else to guard against in terms for Craig Aukerman on that phase of things. So there's all kinds of matchups and things to look at in this thing. Let's get to the phone calls, though, because we know you want to ask Coach Mack a question. Let's go to Lewis in White House, Tennessee. Lewis, you, sir, are on with Coach Dave McGinnis on Mack Talk. Go ahead.
Hey, Coach Mack. My question was, do you think we're going to see more screen passes coming from the offense since, you know, so much pressure is going to be coming down on us, give a chance maybe Henry slip up and maybe take it 75 yards or so for a touchdown. And we haven't seen that much. I know they've used it a little bit, but I was just wondering maybe we use that a little more this weekend.
Lewis, thank you so much for your call. Really, really appreciate it a lot. I love the fact that you listen, and that's a great question. You know, we tried to run the screen pass last week, and I tell you what people are doing. People are being very cognizant of the screen pass for this reason. When you run a lot of play action, okay, and you're working downfield, especially if the best thing to be in against a screen pass is man-to-man, and let me tell you why. The linebackers can hug up to the back when he tries to clear out from behind the line of scrimmage. And the other thing that you do, you could tell last week that the Texans had worked very hard on screen passes, because one of the biggest teaching points for a defense against a team that runs screens is anytime your guards or your centers set and then pull outside, your defensive interior linemen immediately stop, stick their foot in the ground and run exactly sideways, because the way that you defend screens are this. You've got, here's the way that coaches talk. You force it from the outside in. Whoever has the outside force has to force it and knock it back in. You cap force it. You bring pressure from the top down and then run and hit, which those defensive linemen are when they're able to read the lineman and pull out of there. So we have to be very judicious with it. I think people are very alert of the fact that Derrick Henry, if he catches a screen pass and gets a block out there in space, that he can take it a long way. So we're going to have to be very creative to get screen passes going against people, just because they are, most of the time they're in eight-man fronts against us. Most of the time they're in man-to-man against us. And so that enables them to be able to hug up on the back.
Let's go quickly to Brett in Birmingham, Alabama. Brett Batchelor, you are on with Coach Dave McGinnis on Mack Talk. Go ahead, sir.
Hey, Mr. Bryan. Hey, Coach. Hey, Coach Mack. Hope all is well. Coach Mack, we've seen that James Conner, when he's healthy, is a very, very good back in the league. And Chase Claypool is showing that he's a legitimate threat on the Steelers' offense. If you put your coaching hat on and act like you're on the sideline again or in the defensive booth, what is it that the Titans have to do against the Steelers' offense to slow them down while knowing that the Titans offense is going to score on the other side? And then, Mr. Bryan, I know that you as well have gone through a draft betting process. So what do you see from the booth as well? And I'll hang up and listen.
Thank you so much for your call. Really appreciate it. Good question. Yeah, Connor's a dangerous back, and he's one of those sneaky fast, sneaky power backs. You've got to be very, very cognizant of him. Their run game, you know, I mean, I would say right now they're a little more pass heavy than they are run, but when you cannot sleep on James Conner, he's proven, you know, when he took over for Le'Veon Bell, that he's very, very capable of being a very integral part of that offense. You cannot go to sleep on him. And he's a guy that all of a sudden at the end of the game, you look up and you see how many yards he has rushing or how many he's had receiving on you, and you go, wow, this guy really did hurt us. You know, and we weren't even cognizant of it. Claypool is very interesting. Rhett and I, you know, as you well know, we vet nearly 200 players for doing the radio, for Titans radio. I mean, we put a lot of time into it after the combine. You know, we spend nearly 3.5 months on it. When we watch Claypool at Notre Dame, we both liked him. But here's something interesting about Claypool. When he was at Notre Dame, he's about 19 or 20 pounds heavier than he is now. And so people were talking about him. You know, you could tell the hands, he had speed even then, but people were talking about him as an H-back, maybe possibly a move tight end. Well, when he came to the combine, what he did, he lost about 10 to 12 pounds, and all of a sudden he runs a 4.42, and people are going, wow, what is going on here? Because that's not quite how he was used at Notre Dame. And what he has done at Pittsburgh, I mean, for right now, I mean, he, to me, he's one of the top rookie receivers in the league in a draft that was really rookie receiver heavy. If you remember going into this draft, we said this might be one of the best rookie drafts that we've had at the receiver position. Chase Claypool has been a very, very nice draft choice and a very nice productive draft addition right now for the Steelers.
And Brett, he was one of the ones that you could look at and see once you saw him at the combine. He might have some early success because of his size, because he's 6'4", and then he ran that blazing 40. So you can see how he can get out in space and make things happen. He's the leading receiver for the Steelers right now with 335 yards. I think he has 4 or 5 touchdowns from Roethlisberger in this. He's somebody they got to guard against in this thing when they see him on Sunday. We're going to be back in just a few minutes to wrap up Mac Talk. Darrington in Nashville, if you're still on the line, hang tight. We'll come to you next, and we will continue to wrap up and talk about Titans and Steelers this Sunday at Nissan Stadium. You are listening to Mac Talk right here on 104.5 The Zone.
We always knew Blaine.
Final segment of Mac Talk presented by Gary Ashen of RE/MAX Advantage is right here on the home for Titans football, 104.5 The Zone. We'll be taking you into Vol calls here in just a few minutes, but we want to continue to take your phone calls at 615-737-1045. Let's go to Darrington in Nashville. You've been holding for a little while. Go ahead. You're talking to Coach Dave McGinnis on Mac Talk.
Coach Meg, first of all, I want to say thank you for letting the regular guys be able to talk a little X and O's with the great Coach Meg. I highly appreciate it. Two things there. So Taylor Lewan is gone. How is the offensive line going to react? And in regards to you speaking of Chase Claypool, I understand that he is their number one receiver, but he only had one game where he had 3 touchdowns. And that where he led to 4. So the first 2 games, he really wasn't a show. And he's a speed guy with Noah Dory. I think it kind of plays into our hand with they having the number 24 ranked passing offense.
Darrington, first of all, thank you for your kind comments. Look, I'm always for the fans. When I came back here, that's one thing I made clear, that I wanted to interact with the fans. If, you know, if I was going to do this broadcasting on all the different platforms, I absolutely love it. So I love talking with you guys and really just, you know, taking a little deeper dive into football, because I know that you guys, you know, want to know the deeper dives of football in the National Football League. And look, the offensive line, Ty Sambreo is going to be our left tackle. You know, he's filled in for Taylor Lewan, who's had some nicks throughout the season. Clearly now with the ACL, he's out for the season. And so Ty Sambreo will fill in. What we will miss the athleticism of Taylor Lewan. Look, you don't lose a first round all pro tackle and not miss him. I mean, that is just the facts. But Ty Sambreo is a veteran. He's filled in very, very nicely. Arthur Smith will decide, depending on who we play, as to how he's going to adjust his protection packages. There are things that he can do. And then, you know, you start to look at personnel matchups, because always, Darrington, in the National Football League, when you start game planning as a staff, you study schemes, but you attack people. And so he will look and see how he thinks opponents are going to attack, you know, Ty Sambreo. And then, you know, depending on what we do, then we'll either give him help or we'll see if he can handle the person that's over him. That's just the way it works in the National Football League. Claypool, you know, and you can see they've gained more confidence in him as the season has gone on. And look, you've got to remember, Rhett gave you their other receivers. They've got some real receivers. I mean, Juju Smith-Schuster is one of the finest receivers in this league, and also Washington. I mean, they've got receivers, and they got 2 tight ends that can hurt you too. And here's what Roethlisberger's doing different now than he's ever done in the past. A lot of times he's been a guy that's kind of moved around a lot back there and has held the ball a long time. He's not doing that as much anymore. He's getting it out a little bit quicker. He's finding targets that he likes. They tried to put some RPO into their game, which I don't think Roethlisberger likes a lot, but we're going to have to be very cognizant of Claypool because of this. He's a combat catcher that can run fast. That's a deadly combination.
He's Coach Dave McGinnis. I'm Rhett Bryan. And from one Rhett to another Rhett in Nashville, you're on with Coach Dave McGinnis at 615-737-1045. Go ahead, Rhett.
Hey, guys. It's a pleasure getting to talk to y'all. A pleasure to get to talk to another Rhett, and especially Coach McGinnis. What a time to be alive as a Titans fan, 5-0. That's awesome. It's been too long since we've been able to say that. I have 2 questions for you, Coach. The first one is kind of piggybacking off the last caller. You mentioned if we might have to give Sambreo more help. If Coach Vrabel, you know, or I guess it's Arthur Smith, decides to chip with Jonnu as a concerned Titans fan and fantasy football owner, how much will that decrease his productivity in the catching game? And then my second question is, if he does chip, and I don't watch a tight end for his blocking ability, but is Jonnu the right person? Does the packages change, or is Jonnu the right person to block? Or are we going to see Swain more, or are we going to see Firkser in there more? Thank you, guys, and I'll hang up and listen.
All right, Red, thank you for the call. And look, I want everybody to realize, you know, Sam Braille may need no help. It just depends on who his matchup is week to week. He may need no help. He didn't need any help against J.J. Watt after that first play. I mean, they didn't help him at all, you know, the rest of that game, and he did just fine. So you're not going into it thinking he's going to need help. And let me explain chipping to you, regardless of who chips. Chipping does not mean you stay in and block the guy. All you really have to do to chip is make a threat of being on his outside shoulder so that the defensive outside rusher has to avoid you to the inside. You can still get out in the route. And the issue, the thing that chipping does, once you do it once or twice, they become very aware of it. You know, when I was first in this league, I had Richard Dent at the Chicago Bears, had Simeon Rice when I was in Arizona. People would chip them all the time, and they became very cognizant of it. But it's not like a chip is different than double teaming. They're not double teaming that person. They're just making the edge rusher very cognizant of the fact that somebody is coming to their outside shoulder so that they're not able to make that speed move outside. When you start to chip, then you give your offensive tackle a chance to set himself further, harder inside for the timing of the route. That's what chipping is. Chipping is not double teaming. Chipping does not take a guy out of the route at all.
All right, in our last couple of minutes here on Mac Talk, Coach Dave McGinnis, let's get to your keys to a victory over the Pittsburgh Steelers in an effort for the Titans to get to 6-0 on Sunday. What must the Tennessee Titans do?
They still got to be able to run against this physical front. I mean, they've got to get their run game going, because as this run game goes, then everything else works. And if you make Keith Butler start to bring you, then you've got to hurt him with the one-on-one coverage. I mean, that has to happen, Rhett. We have to be able to have some explosives. We've had explosives in several games. Those have been very, very important. Defensively, we can't let the ball go over our head. They're going to complete passes. This is a really good throwing offense. They're going to complete passes. But if we're playing zone, we've got a spot tackle right on the spot. But we can't let the ball go over our head. That's what got us in trouble last week. We let a couple of explosives go, and that got them back in the game. You cannot let that happen. And then the third thing that's going to be extremely, extremely important, you mentioned, you know, their return game. We've got to have great, great coverage on it, because we can't afford to give up field position in the special teams area. That can't happen. When you have two teams that are evenly matched like this, sometimes the special teams can be the swing point of the ball game. We've got to be able to maintain and control field position with our special teams.
So Sunday begins the biggest game for the Titans so far this season. That's saying a lot because of the way 2020 has been, but it's the 5-0 Pittsburgh Steelers coming to Nashville to play the 5-0 Tennessee Titans at Nissan Stadium. Coverage begins here at 10 a.m. on 104.5 The Zone with the Lee Company Countdown to kickoff. Thanks for Ryan Albanese for producing tonight's show. Thanks for everybody who called. And for Coach Dave McGinnis, I'm Rhett Bryan. Ball Calls is next on 104.5 The Zone.